Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Poolside Perspectives podcast. I am Kevin Woodhurst, and with me is my good friend Mike Farley, and we're so glad you found this podcast. Together, we have been homeowner advocates in outdoor living and the pool industry for over 30 years. So we understand the challenges you face creating your backyard paradise. We know your curiosity is not enough to ensure your success. So on this podcast, we're going to talk about the design process and practical steps to help you create that space. We'll have some fun mixed in with it, some aha moments, and this is no fluff. No one has time for that. So we're going to get serious and get very particular about all of these topics. Whether you are a new homeowner with your first remodel or a seasoned homeowner competing your last dream home, we are here to help you end up with what you dreamed of. From pools to patios, pizza ovens to pergolas, porcelain to pumps, pool party to permits, ping pong tables to the processes to your paradise. This is Straight Talk and Action Steps. Let's get started.
So long ago, we looked at different events that happen on certain days, like National Pie Day and Barbecue Day. And one of the things that we found when we were looking at all those days is Trey found that the first week of March was Women in Construction. They get a whole week.
Yeah, okay. A whole week.
Some get a day,
some get a week, some get a month.
Yeah. So I think the Women in Construction should get more than a week.
Yeah.
But we wanted to bring some of the iconic figures in the pool industry, the women that are in it and serve it. And so we're going to have several different people on this episode to give us a little bit of their background and knowledge and just the adventure on how they got into the pool industry. And we have everything from a journalist to a president of a pool company and lead designer to a landscape architect and also someone that's basically knows everything about pool plaster in the industry. So those are four of the job descriptions.
Four of the women that we're bringing on to the podcast to discuss swimming pools.
And also to give their perspectives on things that a homeowner ought to look at.
I love it.
And these people are all icons in the industry, have been at it for decades.
And a plethora of information.
Oh, yeah. So they will provide us lots of perspectives and lots of fun. And I'm looking forward to diving into this first one.
Excellent. Let's do it. The first one is going to be Rebecca Robledo, who is one of the editors for Pool and Spa News, and she's been with them for a very long time. In fact, both Mike and I have known Rebecca for at least 20, if not 25 or 30 years. She is an award-winning trade journalist with more than 30 years of experience reporting on and editing content for the pool, spa, and aquatics industries. She specializes in technical, complex, and detail-oriented subject matter. For this coverage and editing, she has received numerous awards, including four Jesse H. Neal Awards, considered by many to be the Pulitzer Prize of Trade Journalism. She's based in Los Angeles, and Rebecca is amazing. We're so glad to have her on the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor.
So the reason we wanted to have you on, Rebecca, is because obviously you've been around the industry a long time, so you offer a little different insight because you're offering it as an editor and as somebody that contributes to magazines. And so we just wanted to get a little insight from you. We want to learn a little bit more about you, what you've been doing, what got you into the pool industry, and what inspires you. So my first question for you is, how did you end up being an editor for a Pool and Spa News magazine?
Like a lot of people in the pool industry, it was a surprise along the way. And once I got in, that was it. I got sucked in and I fell in love with it. Actually, when I was in college, I did a short internship. I did some internship hours with another pool and spa publication, and a friend had gotten me that job to work over Christmas break. And so I worked there for a little bit. And the first thing he taught me was how to spell diatomaceous earth.
That was a big one.
So I still think that's why I got this job. And then after I graduated from college, I was looking around and this job opportunity came up and I didn't know what it was for, because in the ad, they didn't give a name. It gave a publication, a publishing company name, but not the name of the magazine. And I got it when I was trying to find a job. I had a voicemail message that said, "This is so-and-so from Pool and Spa News calling for Rebecca." And I thought I misheard things because I'd heard of the magazine before. So that was it. At the time, I was living in Phoenix. So I flew into LA and did a job description and, of course, made sure that he knew I knew how to spell diatomaceous earth. And then I got the job. And that was more than 30 years ago.
That's just what I was going to ask you, is how long were you at Pool and Spa News? Over 30 years?
Yeah, I've been there over 30 years. And like I said, there's so much about the industry to love. And so I really loved the industry and started writing about products and then started writing stories. And now I'm the deputy editor of the magazine.
Tell me what a deputy editor is compared to, like, I don't know, the main editor.
The editor is Joanne McLean. She's the editor in chief. So I'm the deputy editor. I still do some of the writing. I edit some of the copy that comes in. I help with the planning. We work very closely together.
So you've been in the industry for over 30 years, been writing about swimming pools and the swimming pool industry. What is, like, the most interesting project that you've ever written about that is just, like, over the top, amazing, crazy? You looked at it the first time and went, wow, that is something else.
There's one that we're writing about right now. We've been tracking it for the past couple of years with Rick Chafee over at Red Rock Pools in the Phoenix area. And that one is really exciting because it incorporates some water park features into a backyard. That is the craziest that comes to mind. It's going to have a surf simulator. It's got a huge lazy river. It's going to have an underground go-kart track, a shark tank with a window, and it's insanely large and has a lot of features and definitely built for fun. I think that one is the most complicated and packed feature that I've seen.
I've seen the plans on that thing. It is absolutely unbelievable. Rick does an amazing job and he does some crazy projects. He's got a great team. Love seeing all of his stuff. It's really good. I'm not surprised that you brought that one up.
No, and it's just crazy engineering and just, like, thousands of hours of planning and thousands of pages of plans. So it's amazing.
Gotcha. So next question is, because you've been around for so long, what do you think has changed the most, say, in the last 5 years? Because I know that prior to COVID, things were a certain way. And during COVID, our industry, we were fortunate, just exploded. But did you see any specific differences in the way builders were doing business? Obviously, they were doing Zoom call, et cetera. But what happened, it seemed like, at least from our perspective as builders, is our industry morphed into, we're swimming pool builders, but now we're outdoor industry, outdoor entertainment area builders, and now we're doing far more than we've ever done before. So from your perspective, what are you seeing that's different from just a few years ago?
Definitely the way that people are doing business, like you said, being able to do things remotely like we're doing right now. So being able to handle the design and the first consultations over Zoom. A lot of what people are talking to me about is that kind of technology. Being able to chat with people and communicate with them via text. It's making it easier for people to communicate while the project's going on and to get photos and videos of the project in progress and that kind of thing. The other thing that's not necessarily related to COVID, but I think that this Department of Energy ruling about energy efficient motors is going to have a big impact, certainly on energy spending. Because now all pumps made in the U.S. for pools and spas have to meet certain efficiency requirements. And so I think that's going to help consumers save in their electricity costs.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. That's a great one. So what is your favorite part of your job? You've been in it for a long time, so clearly you love it. You said that more than once. But what is something that brings you a lot of joy in your job? What do you like doing as the editor? What makes you feel happy and good and excited about, you know, our industry?
Just learning new things. And aside from the people who I love and who've been extremely kind and very supportive and generous with their information for the betterment of the industry, aside from the people and the fun aspect, there's so many dimensions to the pool industry that I think a lot of people don't appreciate. To be a good pool builder, you need to be able to design a pool. You need to either engineer the pool or know when to send it out for engineering. You have to worry about hydrostatic pressure and keeping this structure and having it last for decades underground. And then you have to take care of your client and distinguish the difference between what they want and what they maybe have more competitive feelings with and are trying to keep up with their neighbors versus what they actually want. And dealing with different communication styles. There's just so much going on. So just learning. And then, of course, some of these projects are amazing. And having people share their business acumen and all the interesting ways that they're adapting to different times right now is very interesting. So it's the learning aspect, and it's just feeding off of people's brilliance and their enthusiasm for what they do.
Because every day it's different. You're dealing with something entirely different. So there's not some monotony of doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's the way it is for you guys. And so I'm lucky because that's the way it is for me too.
Yeah, absolutely. These are going to be questions since you've been around along for a while. If you were to build a brand new pool, bought a new house, bought a new pool, you've seen all these designs, you've seen all these features, as an editor and as somebody that has a lot more knowledge of all the things that are available out there, if Rebecca was going to build a pool, what are some of the features you would put on it?
I would want some kind of gently trickling waterfall, maybe a rain curtain, because a rain curtain can be both very relaxing because it does simulate the sound of rain, but you can also ratchet it up and make it a little more impactful during get-togethers and parties and things like that. I might want a lazy river because, again, it can convert from a relaxing feature where you just take cruising through your backyard and taking in the design of your backyard and your pool, or it could be something that you have a lot of fun in, and it's also something that you can get some exercise done in. You can walk against the current and that kind of thing. And then I love mosaic tiles, so I would definitely have some kind of mosaic tile feature.
Like in the bottom of it?
In the bottom or in a fountain or just any kind of application. Yeah, the nice thing about doing a whole pool in that, of course, is that the whole pool glows. Same thing with doing a vanishing edge and covering that in the glass tile mosaic. It just really has a glowing effect. But even a simple water feature, I just would want to incorporate that in some way.
Everybody wants a lazy river.
Yeah, I can't blame them, man.
Yep, it makes the pool absolutely massive, and we've got to have all kinds of stuff on it.
And it's interesting to see how some designers are finding ways to do them and, you know, with smaller footprints by maybe having them go around in a circuit as opposed to being long and meandering.
I think you actually did an article on a lazy river pool I did almost 20 years ago. In fact, Mike and I were talking about, before we started the podcast, he said something on the order of Rebecca did his first article. And I was thinking you might have done my first article as well.
Oh, wow.
So
that's an honor. It's been great to cover your work.
Thank you. And Mike's done a lot of amazing stuff. Okay, so here's the next question. And I'm asking these because your perspective is very different probably from ours. And that's really what the show is all about. What is one visual and one maintenance feature that you would do that most people don't think about that would actually improve not only their experience with the swimming pool, but just the maintenance side of it?
If you can get an automation system, I would suggest that you do that because it's going to take care of so much of the work for you, especially now. I think I'd mentioned variable speed pumps with your pumps that can change speed depending on the application. And controllers are really great for those because during times when you need it to be pumping more water, you can make it go faster. And when you don't need as much water, when you just kind of in maintenance mode, it can go slower and save you some money. If I could get a controller, I would add that to my pool for sure.
Yeah, we've definitely gone 100% control systems. The pools are just not complex anymore. And you're right, with the VSP pumps and with all the lighting and everything, it's hard to do it walking out 40, 50, 100 feet out to your pool equipment, be changing stuff all the time. So I think that the automation is a big deal for sure. Thank you for that. And then I asked you earlier, what are the changes in the last 4 or 5 years in the pool and outdoor living environment and what its impact has had on homeowners? Again, as you talk to a lot of builders, what's some of the things that you're hearing that people are asking about and doing?
I think I've touched on what I think have been the biggest impacts, which are the energy efficiency aspect of it.
So they're basically changing the fact that in Phoenix, or at least in Arizona, certainly in Texas, almost everything, your circulation pump has to be a variable speed. That's been that way for a while. You're saying that all the auxiliary pumps are now going to VSP pumps. Is that right?
Yeah. Any pump that's sold in the U.S. needs to meet certain energy efficiency requirements.
Got it.
I don't think they don't all need to be VSPs, but it is easier for them to pass the test and meet those efficiency requirements if they are VSPs.
So they're just engineering them just to be more efficient. So we're saving people money on electricity.
Correct.
Okay. And then if you were to recommend a friend to find a pool or outdoor living designer, and let's just say they didn't live in your area, how would somebody find somebody that lives in a different area from your perspective? How would they find somebody? How does somebody know?
And they don't know anybody in that area.
Say somebody lives in North Carolina and they decide they want to get a pool and they're going to do something pretty nice, but they're not really sure who to use. So typically people go to the phone book or they get on the internet, they type in something, 2-3 companies come up, they start calling. But if somebody wanted to find somebody that was really qualified, maybe had a lot of education, a lot of experience, been around for a while, what's a resource that you would recommend to somebody to find those people? Because there's lots of good people around the country, but how do people find them?
I think the best way is to look through our industry organizations, to look through our buyers groups and our fraternal organizations and our associations and see what kind of education that they've been taking with regards to like the Pool and Hot Tub Alliance, Watershape University, Genesis. When you're looking for a builder, I would advise looking to see what kind of education that they have in that respect. If you're just looking for a place, a portal to find people in your area, you can look through buyers groups. And again, these fraternal organizations isn't the right word, but these organizations where people, they get together and they learn about design and running their business together. You could learn there. I would suggest looking, if your state has a registrar of contractors, find out what their status is, find out how good their license is, and try to find out about the people who own the company, not only the company itself, if it hasn't been around for that long. And then when you're talking to them, I would suggest if you're choosing a designer because you like the pictures that you've seen on their website, or if they're making a PowerPoint presentation or whatever, ask if they designed and built those pools.
Right.
Because a lot of people don't understand necessarily all of the ways that intellectual property works. And so sometimes they're borrowing other people's pictures. So find out if they designed the pool, find out if they built the pool, and find out if that designer is still around, if they did design the pool. And then if you're able to see some of their projects firsthand, take the opportunity and check the materials and see how well they look and look at the water flow and make sure that it's uniform, and especially on things like vanishing edges. So those are the things that I would suggest to somebody who's looking for a qualified designer and builder.
Those are really awesome. Thanks so much for that.
Yeah, thank you.
This is the last question. We're going to let you off the hook. What skills are important for a designer to have, and how would they have gotten those skills? So we not only talk to our listeners, are not only consumers, but we have a lot of people in the industry. And I think we have a fairly young audience actually within the industry listening. So the younger guys are coming up, and there's some great ones coming. What's the best way for those people to get an education in the industry?
We've got some great educational opportunities and offerings in the industry. So I would suggest that you take advantage of those. Some of the skills that I think are maybe not valued as much, or that we could stand to learn more about, are, I don't know, how would you say, they're a little more subtle. It's things like combining materials, combining colors, scaling projects so that they're not too big or too small, that kind of thing. And so I would suggest taking classes with some of our higher end design groups within the industry, or even going out and maybe taking some landscape classes or art classes to learn how to do that. But I think we've become so good at the technical aspect, and we've become so knowledgeable about putting in features and making sure that they work. And we've got all these wonderful materials at our disposal, and people are not afraid to use them. But I think now the next step is to learn how to combine all of those things and learn how to scale them and fit them in the yard so that we have a space that just fits our users like a glove.
That was a great answer. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's absolutely correct. Okay. May I offer you my profuse thank you for coming on the show?
Oh, thank you. It was a huge honor, and I so appreciate it, and can't wait to see more episodes.
All righty. Thanks, Rebecca. We appreciate it a whole bunch. Can't wait to see you again. You're coming to Dallas next year or
Absolutely.
This year? We'll see you then.
Yeah, later this year. See you then.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Coming up next on the show is Leah Frederick. She is the president and owner of View Custom Pools in North Carolina. I'm interested in talking to her because I was stationed in North Carolina eons ago, and I'm curious how far she is from one of the bases I was at.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. She has a Bachelor's of Science in Mechanical Engineering from Clarkson University. She's the former PHTA North Carolina Chapter President. She's been involved with PHTA, NPC, which is the National Plaster Council, PB, IWI, and Watershapes University Dean of Culture, expert witness, former Red Cross instructor trainer, professional rescue and CPR. She's got a lot of great experience as well, and I can't wait to talk to her.
Oh, it's going to be fun. Leah's a great person to talk to, and we got to talk to her about her trip.
Okay.
She's taking a trip with Watershapes University to Chile.
Oh, they're going to, what's the name of that place?
Come on, Spider, help us here.
Machu Picchu.
Yes. Spider, you're the man.
They're taking a Genesis trip there, so there's a bunch of people going.
This is Watershapes University.
This Watershapes University.
Yes.
That's going to be a great trip.
Yeah, she went last year and thought it was so beneficial. She came back, she's like, hey, we ought to take a group of people.
But what they're talking about there, because there's no water there, is just design and patterns and stuff like that.
A lot of the terracing and the water flow that was done on that area is still functioning today.
Oh, wow.
So
it's got to be really neat.
Yeah, so there is water flowing.
You know, in Chile, they have that massive pool, which is, I don't know, 1,000 times bigger than the one up in North Dallas. It's the biggest man-made swimming pool on the planet.
Yes.
It's huge. Thank you for joining us. We're very excited to have you.
We don't have a ton of time, so we want to jump in because we've got lots of curious questions to ask you since you're an icon in the pool industry.
I don't know about that.
Oh, there's very few people that have the certifications that you have. You're a master's through PHTA, right?
And correct.
You have your IWI professional certification as well.
Yes.
And a Red Cross certification.
I had to drop that years ago when I decided that it was just too much.
To keep I used to certify
all of our lifeguards at the swim and tennis clubs that we own. And then it just got too busy during the busiest part of the pool season. So they have to find their own certifications now.
We read your bio and I have one curious question. So how do you get from mechanical engineering to the pool industry?
It was kind of a long journey. When I was young, was always into pools. I was that kid that would ride their bike to the swim and tennis club for swim practice or swim team, stay there all day long, and then wait for my parents to come pick me up when the pool closed. And then you fast forward, and during my teenage years and all the way through college, really the only job I ever had was lifeguarding or teaching swim lessons. And after college, I actually did work in corporate America for about 8 years as a mechanical engineer. I was really more of a senior project manager. But then I quit when I got engaged and went to work for the same company that my husband was working for. And we were managing swim. He was managing multiple swim and tennis clubs. I was managing one of those, the one here in Greensboro. And then a few years later, we bought that swim and tennis club and have since bought a second one. And in that transaction, I quit engineering and went back to, that's when I was doing all the Red Cross stuff, certifying all of our employees and training other instructors and just running a swim and tennis club day in and day out. So in that transition, I ended up going back and teaching swimming lessons just for fun, really just fell in love with it. There was a guy that we knew that was working on these two pools that we owned, and he needed somebody to help him run a pool construction company. And he didn't really know how to run a business. He knew how to build pools. So we teamed up with him in 2008, and we worked with him. I did the design end of things. My husband did the business end of things, and he built the pools. And that's when we got involved with continuing education. And the Genesis program at the time had just rolled out in 2010, 2009, somewhere in there. And we saw it at a conference, and we started going to it because neither of us had been from a construction background at all. And we were learning that we weren't doing things the proper way. And by going to these classes, we did learn how to do things correctly and started down that road. I went down the design path and George went down the construction path. And then a few years into it, we actually split from our business partner at the time because he was not open to continuing education. I went and got my general contractor license and we opened our own business.
Awesome.
In 2012.
That's a great story. There's so many people in our industry that don't see any value in the education. And I commend you for recognizing how important it is. And we have such great opportunities now within the industry that there's really not a lot of excuses left to not figure out how it should be done. So kudos to you guys.
And I'll tell you, I always said, we all know that COVID was great for our industry, but for the educational component of it, and now having multiple platforms to learn from, whether it's PHTA or Genesis or Watershape, what that forced everybody to do was come up with new content. And we can't go into a conference teaching all the same things that we were teaching, these core classes. So now there's just tons of classes out there and tons of different things to learn, whether it's free modules online or ones that you pay for our certifications. And I just think that it really helped the industry leapfrog forward with best practices and content out there to learn from.
Oh, yeah. It took me 2 decades to get my master's certification. I explained to people that there was no online classes, when we first started.
Right.
Like you said, a plethora of that today. And then you'd go to a conference And you might get one or two classes. That was it.
One class a year. Yeah.
And so it was kind of.
It took me 8 years to get to the SWD level of dentist. This was like 8 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now so, you could probably do it in 8 months.
That'd be a tough 8 months. It's certainly much more possible than it was in the past. And like you said, it teaches you all the things that you wish you knew when you started, but at least you know how to get things headed in the right direction. So,
Lee, I got a question for you. You don't have to answer it.
Oh.
How do you like that? You know, my like Mike, and I haven't spent as much money as Mike has, but I've spent tens of thousands of dollars over the course of the years on continuing education. I know he spent more than me because he spent a lot more time in it. I'm curious, and the reason I'm asking this question is, you know, for everybody listening, there's a way to do stuff and you have to learn how to do it. If you're new to the industry and you haven't gone to these educational opportunities, you need to start. Start sooner than later. And it is just part of a career. As you invest in yourself, you go to these programs, you get certified. My question is, how much money do you think you have spent on your pool industry? And I'm not talking about your mechanical engineering industry. Right. Obviously, you see the benefit of education because you are a mechanical engineer. So, I mean, I love it. This is great.
Oh, gosh. I bet easily $150,000. Easily. And we've got two of us. So my husband and I are both
you and George
both. Level, so probably twice that.
That is a massive commitment to excellence.
Massive commitment. But it's also put us in our area, at least, as the lead builder from a quality standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even put a pool in for $150,000. So take all of that knowledge and dwindle it down to one pool, basically.
Right. Well, no, and that's the interesting part, because you have a company that knows how to do it right. It's, let's just say it's $150,000. And then the homeowner gets an estimate from somebody else and it's $110,000. They think you're just charging $40,000 extra just for the sake of charging extra, when in fact, you're doing so much more on the construction side of it and ensuring that it's built the way it should be built so it stands the test of time and people have a good experience.
Yeah. We spend a lot of time, especially our first appointment with the homeowner, not so much convincing them that we're the builder that they need to build with, but educating them all along the way. And then when we get to the estimate part, there are certain bullet points that I put in there that are specific to the way that we build things. And I tell the homeowners, I said, the reason I'm telling you this is because if you go to talk to somebody else, ask them these questions, because this is how you're supposed to be building a pool. We use number 4 steel and we do it on 10-inch centers. I know not everybody does that, and that's okay, but we've just seen a lot of renovation work that is just really shoddy, and it's not that much more expensive to build a solid structure like that, and the homeowner gets a better product.
100%. So you set me up for my next question. Our podcast is primarily for the homeowner, okay? We're trying to educate homeowners on what things that they should be looking at. So if you were to build a pool today, okay, for yourself, a pool and outdoor living space, what are a couple of features that you would want in that space and why?
That's a great question.
So I would want a water feature of some sort. And what I have in mind is like a very subtle water wall, very soft white noise. I think a lot of times I go into design meetings and they want these, you know, roaring waterfalls, which they turn on a few times and they realize how loud they are. But I would want something that's a little bit more relaxing and peaceful and functions as a privacy. I would also want, my parents have this at their, they just moved into a house in South Carolina at a Del Webb neighborhood and the pool is fantastic. But they have these little like socializing coves, and that's what I call them. They look like a little half circle, although they're not circular, they're squared off with some radius corners, and there's just a little bench in there and bubbles in it. And there could be 100 people in the pool and they're in groups of 6 or 8 sitting in these little coves all the way. And there's bunches of them at this pool, but
so it's a community.
It is just something that I think is really cool for a hangout area. And I've built it into some commercial pools and 1 or 2 residential, but it's just a cool little area to hang out in and be face to face with people versus a bench that just like at a bar.
Right.
You know, when you're sitting along the bar and you're having to turn your head to talk to somebody versus sitting across the table from somebody or on a corner, I think it's just easier to socialize like that. And sitting in a pool is even better.
So does it have a table in the space or is it just a
I've bench? Done them with tables. No, these don't. Okay. They just have little jets.
You said
they're not even like jets that you turn on and off. It's just water and air coming out.
So they've set up almost like a Venturi return that's got water like a spa jet almost in them?
Almost, yeah. They're not as powerful as spa jets.
Right.
But it's just something that you sit on and it's more like bubbles coming up off the floor or through the wall. It's not loud like a spa. It's just really water moving around in these little areas. So probably to keep the dirt off the benches.
So a place to hang out and a cool water feature would be your two choices. Awesome.
Yeah, not a very noisy water feature though.
So your tip with homeowners is to be careful of big water features with high decibel ratings because you're really not going to sit out there by it and enjoy it.
Yeah. One of the very first big renovations I did was the homeowner wanted to drown out the noise of the neighbors behind them because they had teenagers and they also had a pool. It was like the teenager hangout. And so we put on this pool, we renovated it and put a big ledge on there with bubblers. We've made his half moon spa into a full circle spa that had three spillways. And then we also put on these, they were called fireflies at the time. They were like these little wand, like I think they had lights on them at the time.
Crystal fountains.
It was a long time ago. And it was just like on both sides of the pool spilling into it. And they said when they entertained and turned on everything, they couldn't hear a thing from their own party because there was so much water noise. So it was a little bit of an overkill. But the funny part of the whole story was that the homeowners behind them moved before we even finished the pool renovation. So all this work to quiet the neighbors behind them, and then they end up getting new neighbors. But it ended up being a really nice renovation anyways.
Awesome.
Got a question?
Yeah, I have a question for you. So in North Carolina, building pools, what are some of the things that homeowners either ask you or are confused or concerned about when building a pool? What are some of the things that you deal with maybe specifically in North Carolina that possibly we don't deal with here in Texas? However, I think that because I've been to both places, they're similar. I'm imagining you have soil conditions there.
Yeah, we have clay, you know, red clay everywhere, unless you go out towards, funny, right where I'm at, it's all red clay. And then you go east of us to the foot sand hills and they've got sand. And then you go west of us to the mountains and they've got rocks. Expansive soil. There's not a lot of new builders in our area. They tend to, if they do come in as a new builder very quickly, I think they realize that clay is not super easy to build in.
Nope.
But as far as in our area specific that I get asked about, I think probably the number one thing I get asked about, and I don't think this is specific to our area, but that people are still really misled on what salt chlorinated pools are.
Oh, yeah.
I think that there's no chlorine at all. And we actually don't really even do salt, but we will if there's a very heavy demand for it.
Is there, from a maintenance standpoint, do you have a preference? Something that a customer might want to explore.
No salt. We do what's called low chlorine system. So when I explain it to the homeowner, I show them we're putting ozone and UV on there. We're using chemical automation for your pH, either liquid chlorine, and your chlorine levels will be much less than that of a pool without some of these additional. So usually their goal is to get away from chlorine, in which explain to them that salt is not necessarily the answer for that. Now, in some scenarios, I don't mind putting salt on, but I probably 99% of my pools, I don't.
So what would you say for a homeowner that maybe built a pool 5 years ago, they're going to come build a pool today? What are the changes that have happened in the last 4 or 5 years to our industry or the requests that you have? You do a lot more outdoor living projects incorporated. So what would you say is if someone was coming to you, what would be the things you'd want to think about today versus 5 years ago?
So I try to look at, especially the outdoor living part of it, I try to look at it from a functionality standpoint and I let the homeowners know an outdoor kitchen is not the same thing as an indoor kitchen. And a couple of things that I really try to emphasize is lighting. Like outdoor lighting really could take a really cool space during the day and make it just fantastic, 10 times better at night. Spend the money in lighting, which also brings me to the LED technology now on our pool lights has finally caught up to the rest of the world with its technology. And now we can dim and do any color that we want and also have white. I have the best of all worlds now in pool lighting.
You're essentially designing for the daytime and the nighttime is what you're saying. As you guide your
clients. I think all too often the outdoor lighting component gets squashed. Mm-hmm. It really should be pretty high up there on the make it awesome list.
For sure. Oh,
it makes a big difference in a space. And quite honestly, you live at home more at night than you do during the day.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, you're going to be using that space probably more at night. And if it's lit up well, you'll really be using it more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lighting's really key.
If it's lit up bad, you probably won't use it at all.
Okay. You have a friend. They're not in North Carolina. And you're going to recommend them. How would you go about finding a pool designer to work for them? What would your recommendations for them to look, how to find that person?
So whether it's a friend or even a homeowner that's looking for a designer or a builder, I tend to equate it to the similarity of building a house. Like you wouldn't go blindly into building a house without a designer involved or an architect or a building professional. And then I would make sure that they are doing their homework and find out what makes them or what qualifies them as a design professional. Is it a degree? Is it an industry degree? Is it a college degree? What is their specialty? And not that I wouldn't say I have a specialty by any means, but I think the accreditations and the licenses out there for design professionals now are such that you could really be blindsided by somebody that just calls themselves a designer.
For sure. Absolutely.
There's some people that grab a 3D program and crank out some stuff and they're a designer now.
Speaking of 3D programs, do you have what program do you use for your presentations?
For our design reveals, we use our concepts are done in VIP Pool Studio, VIP 3D. And then we also will do our construction drawings with AutoCAD. So a combination of both of those.
Awesome. So when they go to and they find this designer, what skills should that designer have? And how would that designer get those skills?
There's all kinds of classes out there to get skills. I even said go to ones that aren't specific to what I'm doing. Like we just got back from like a TechoBlock one-day workshop, but it was specific to pools. And we don't really even do a lot of pavers, but I was hoping that just learning some of the stuff that they teach their installers that in seeing some of their new products, we would be able to advance our knowledge of that product specifically. As far as a designer goes, I guess I would look at somebody that is open to working with the outdoor elements. Shade is one of the big things that we often find ourselves designing into spaces. And you could put a shade structure up anywhere, but if you don't put it up in the right spot, it's really not very functional.
Yep.
And so I do think our software helps us understand that by being able to show people different times of the day in the middle of the summer where that sun is actually going to fall. And are they actually going to get the shade that they're looking for? Are they going to get it at 6 p.m. when they don't need it anymore? So things like that.
You're talking like a designer.
What's that?
You're talking like a designer.
Yeah, she is a good designer.
I'm a designer. The other thing I think is important, and I'm really lucky to have the designer that works for me. She was an interior designer by degree, but she also worked in a restaurant design. So understanding the ins and outs and functionality of where, how a kitchen layout needs to be is...
Wow, she's probably...
It's really helpful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're involved with Watershape University, and I understand that you went on a really awesome trip this last year, and now you are going to host other people to go on a similar trip. Can you tell us about the trip?
Sure. So one of the things I find is that from a designer's eye, I find that travel opens up my mind to more than anything that I do. Going to different cultures, seeing different ways that people decorate things, different ways that they use stone, different ways that they do drains. You can get a lot of inspiration from seeing other cultures in other parts of the world and going to gardens and stuff like that. But yes, I got to go to Peru in 2021, went with my cousins, actually. There was 15 of us and we were hiking. And so when I got back, I actually did some research on Peru. And I found out that I had missed Well, I didn't really miss. I didn't know that they were there. A lot of things that the Incas did with respect to water and water resources. And there's also, at the time, it's not the biggest fountain park in the world now anymore. Dubai is, but there is a water park there. Not like a water park that you go down on slides, but like a fountain park that does a show a couple times every evening right in Lima. And I didn't get to see that. So I am organizing a trip in September for anybody that wants to go. And it's going to be focused around water. And I actually am trying to do several of these trips. I don't know exactly where we're going to go next, but hopefully every couple of years or so, we'll have a trip that takes anybody in our industry that wants to be culturally enlightened, let's put it that way.
Yes.
And it's not going to be so much educational as much as it is going to be like, okay, yeah, this is really cool to see all these different things that maybe we don't have here in the United States, or things that were done hundreds of years ago that are still in use that you'd think that we'd be able to do here in the United States with some longevity to it.
I agree. The travel is super important and very enlightening. I spent a lot of years traveling in the military all over the world, and yes, saw lots of stuff that is inspiring for sure.
My wife is always like, you're such a pool nerd. Every time you go somewhere, you're studying how the drain in the patio works and taking a picture of this weird thing here. And you know, we went to...
It's called a sickness.
Yeah, I've got it.
We all have it.
The only cure I do.
I admit, I call myself a water nerd.
Yeah, so I got... What about 5-6 years ago, I got to go to Rome, Italy, which I never thought I would get to go to. And I was just like an overload because there's so much there and so much things that's been constructed and things of beauty that have lasted centuries. And it's funny, we can't build something that lasts 20 years here. But anyway, so I really look forward to your date for the trip conflicted with something I already had planned. Otherwise, I would have already been signed up. So I'm looking forward.
Yeah, we've got a good group going.
I'm looking forward to, hopefully you get your dates out there for your next one sooner than later. And so
yeah, I will. Yeah, I wanted to figure out where we're going to go next. I have a whole list of places. I don't know whether the international end of things is good for everybody. So I thought about maybe doing it every other year internationally, to give people some time to plan for that.
I know Jason Brownlee is a huge fan of Japan right at the moment. So
Yes.
Yeah, he had a cool trip there.
Yeah, like actually, so one of the things, I just took his advanced design class back in the fall, and the whole class was really a deep dive into design details and how to design a space that you never want to leave. And it was just such a fantastic class. And he talked about everything from Disney World, the attention to details that they had. And we talked about all the things that they go through just to make it so you never want to leave, you know, Disney World. Right. And you don't even realize that you're like in Orlando. You think that you're in Hogwarts. Yes. And then he talked also about spas. And I never really thought about that. But shortly after taking that class, I went to a really top resort spa that was on one of the heritage trips in Mexico. And it was unbelievable how the experience before your actual spa, whatever you signed up to do, your massage, they had a 90-minute aqua, they call it, therapy. And you went to 11 different things and they had somebody shuffling you around into all these different experiences. But everything was just a sensory thing, whether it was hot water, or cold water, or bubbled water, or all these different pools and saunas that you went to for 90 minutes before your actual massage, which was pretty cool. And it was over 3 stories. Like they had water coming down 3 stories into some of these pools.
It's amazing the fun things that we get to see and do as professionals in the swimming pool design industry. Really appreciate you getting on with us and helping homeowners understand some things and exposing us to things, and hopefully some of us can travel with you and see some more things.
Yeah, absolutely. I know one thing that I do try to talk homeowners into, and I just think it's a design detail that I'm finding it's not that easy to find here in North Carolina, but template, like when they have curves and freeform pools, which we do a good bit of, is to find a good, somebody that can template and fabricate the coping, I think is such a design detail that gets overlooked. And everybody uses these little small pieces of coping and tries to just cut them and chop them up so they fit around the curbs.
The little pies.
If you can find yourself a good templater or a good fabricator that can cut bigger slabs into curves, it just looks so, so much better.
Yeah, awesome tip. Any last thoughts for a homeowner working on their project?
The other thing I can't stand to see is people that don't use the pebble drains. Filled. If you're going to put a drain in the floor, at least color it.
Right.
Or fill it with pebble.
Yes.
Don't just have a big piece of plastic down there. And it's the same thing with the skimmers. There's so many ways to hide your skimmer lids now.
Oh, yes.
It's such an easy thing to do.
Yes. Jason Brownlee exposed me. I was in the class with you. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Remember he land blasted me about my skimmer lids on my particular project.
That's right.
Yes.
I do remember.
So little did he know that I've switched. That job is just sold several years before we found out about hide skimmer lids. Anyway, so we all learn and live. So I remember David Tisherman giving everybody a hard time about their plastic and their plastic drains. So we all have come away since
was
that.
Was there anything he didn't give everybody a hard time
about? Right.
No, that was just David. He was an artist at that. So anyway, he had a very passionate individual that brought a lot of things to the pool industry.
I just enjoyed whipping him in cribbage.
Cribbage, yeah. We have to jump on.
The very first, that big renovation I told you about that we did long, long time ago. They didn't have colored drains or lids then. We got that picture put in a magazine, Pool and Spa magazine at the time. And no joke, there's a picture of our spa sitting there and all the features going. And all I can see is the white drains.
Yep.
That whole picture.
That's what
and
we
it
do
just
to
drives
ourselves.
Me insane. We've changed them since then, but.
We all have. So. We appreciate your time. We have to jump on another call, but we'll put your contact information.
Send some pictures. We'll put some pictures up and we'll promote you.
Yes, especially your trip. But thanks again, Leah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You guys have a good evening. Thank you.
You too.
That was really awesome talking about her and George and the investment that they've made in education.
Absolutely. It's what it takes.
And they parted ways with the guy that they were working with because he didn't see the advantage of that. And now they have one of the best pool companies there in North Carolina.
And most of us have been around a while that have worked possibly for organizations that could care less.
Yeah. So I really thought that that was cool. But her thoughts on lighting and the outdoors, I think, is something that we've talked about before. It's such a dramatic difference when you have good lighting.
I saw something on one of the social media platforms last night. It was a whole front yard that was decked out with PAL lighting and all kinds of stuff. And it was just nuts. It was crazy. And there's so much to do with lighting. And that's always been something really important to me that I've expressed to people, especially in Phoenix, because it's hot there. And people generally use their pool more in the evenings than at night. And trying to compel them to think about nighttime design as well was just part of the program.
Yeah. So I think that her thoughts about looking for a designer to just find out what their certifications and knowledge base were, mm-hmm. whether it's college or through the industry, there's so much available now that if you're going to have a big investment, you want to make sure that somebody has that knowledge base.
Well, she brought up something that I keyed on, and that was you wouldn't hire a home builder and just let them go carte blanche. You're going to have a team of people. There's a process to it. It takes a little bit of time to put together. You and I have been doing this so long that we remember back when we were just, you know, drawing on paper at people's table and there wasn't that many options. It was an 80 perimeter pool, 3 feet of deck around. It's X. We've been now, as we've talked about, morphed into this. We're outdoor designers.
Yes.
And there's a lot going on.
Yes. So I thought her term too is she gets to do a design reveal.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah, I like that term. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Leah's got some really cool stuff that she's done, and they have a great company, and she's got some great plans on some trips, which I think a lot of people would find fun, whether you're in the pool industry or if you're just like to travel and see different things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that she clearly is an asset to our industry and has obviously contributed in a lot of ways and is utilizing the resources that we have within the industry to become even better. That's great.
Awesome.
This show is all about helping you become a better buyer, a better pool owner, And hopefully you're going to find some insights into how to enjoy your pool even more so, how to help your friends, your family, anybody looking to buy a pool in the future or that want to remodel their backyard, add an outdoor fireplace, fire pit, add an outdoor kitchen area, add some shade cells or whatever else it is. We want to be that resource for you. And that's the end goal here. And we promise that there's going to be a ton of information. We'll try to go through it, you know, as relatively quickly, but also slow so people can understand. But the intent of the show, the reason Mike and I are doing this is because we just got a lot in our heads and we want to share it. So we hope to see you here every single week. Thanks for listening.